Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we're going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
All right, Sean, I see we're recording already.
We are recording.
So we're going to have to entertain and educate as we try to do it here on ITSP Magazine.
It's time to learn.
Yeah.
Also time to do. We have a professor to help us learn today, and we're walking the edge.
Absolutely. And we're looking into the future. And this is the channel, The Future of the Future, where we see, where we look at advanced technology most of the time, but sometimes we look even back at what the dial-up modem used to be, maybe. and then we just leapfrog all the way into the future of the future. And today it's a conversation on a topic that I'm honest, I'm going to have to learn. So I'm looking forward to learn a lot of things today. And yeah, having a professor, it's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of professor, he's gonna take us through advanced technology leading to advanced humanity, I suspect. And that's Professor Sharam Dostar. He's the head of Distributed Systems Group at the Vienna University of Technology. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sean and Marco. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's absolutely a pleasure to have you.
I think, Marco, a few words from Professor Sharam to learn a little bit more about you. So take it away.
Oh, okay. So, I'm a professor of computer science at the Vienna University of Technology in Austria. And I am focusing in my research on distributed systems, and in particular, all the fun part of it, because the exciting systems are all distributed. So I research systems typically based on the internet, like focusing on cloud computing, edge computing, Internet of Things more recently. And I also bring into that mix the people, the humans, us, into that equation, and look at it from a systems infrastructure perspective.
And that's just perfect for us, because we have always been talking about the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society, and really curious about this relationship between technology and humanity, which many times we see as a separate thing, but we need always to remember that we are the one that create technology. So it doesn't just rain from the sky magically.
Yeah, exactly.
So in particular here, for our audience and also for ourselves, if you maybe can dissect how you address edge intelligence, which is the conversion of artificial intelligence and edge computing. So maybe a little introduction on what these are and what does it mean.
Right. So the way I see things from a meta level basically is that we are seeing an evolution of systems. And the evolution of the information systems that we see nowadays is quite astounding. I mean, in the past, computer scientists were mainly concerned with the hardware software part of the systems, right? So we did all what was necessary in order to develop those systems, to model them, etc. People were typically outside the system. They were just interacting with the system, but they were not of primary concern as a functional building block of a system. And furthermore, the things were also not part of a system. So all the things that we are discussing now in terms of Internet of Things, right? They were typically not of any concern to computer scientists. Programming industrial machines, etc., having intelligent manufacturing, autonomous vehicles, and all of that stuff, that was not of primary concern. But now things are changing, and they are changing since a couple of years. the way that they are changing is that we are building increasingly what I call in my research elastic systems. An elastic system means that they are composed out of these three building blocks: people, software, and things. Now, the interesting part is that we have a lot of examples out there in the application space, like smart grid, health networks, governmental networks, smart homes, etc. All of these have these three building blocks, but to different degrees, of course. In some systems, we have more people in it. In other systems, we have more software part. And in other, we have more the things in the sense of Internet of Things. However, what is really interesting is that all of these three building blocks come with their own abstractions, with their different programming languages, with their different concerns. And it is absolutely unclear how can we build a system which is composed out of these building blocks, and how do we define their properties? How do these parts actually interact with each other? Because the difficulty is that they all come with different abstractions. Just to give you a very concrete example, human collaboration is basically still very primitive in our days today, right? So if you look at the platforms for collaboration, essentially it goes to message exchange, like email, some social media, etc. But there is a big gap between how people can send coordinative message to orchestrate different parts of the system, or vice versa. Is it currently not possible to actually have a system actually delegating work to one person or to a team of people? And the scenarios in which I'm actually interested in, like analytical scenarios for smart cities, etc., that is a fundamental requirement. How is it possible to actually kind of go transcend, so to speak, the typical boundaries of the application spaces that we have? How is it possible to actually ask different types of questions where we as people are interested in finding the solution, but the boundaries of the typical vertical silos hindering us doing so? And this is kind of what I talk when I speak about these new kind of elastic systems. I like to always bring the example of ecosystems, right? So when you look into nature, you see ecosystems all over the place, right? So let's take, for example, the marine ecosystem. It is composed of the water, the rocks, the animals, the plants. They all interact with each other in kind of in an harmonious way. And they interact with each other kind of, the interaction is not so super visible if you look at it from an engineering perspective, but still they interact. And I would like to kind of mimic that ecosystem notion in the systems that we develop for the future. How is it possible to actually specify, design, model, and program the systems in a way that we can create these elastic ecosystems? That's my goal.
Oh, it's incredible, and so many thoughts and questions running through my mind. A couple of things. So the first, it's interesting that you led with people, and then software and things. And in your description there, you talked about programming software and things, but we're not necessarily programming people, or should we be programming people?
Yeah.
Talk about people interacting with the system. And I'm wondering, and I'm thinking, okay, we're the fish in your marine ecosystem. And did the fish change to adapt to the ecosystem? Or, you know, so I'm wondering, do we program the people?
that's a very good question, which I, you know, it's of big interest to me. So I think that essentially what I called here programming is, of course, not really programming in that sense, right? Because as humans, we have a free will. We are autonomous agents. So we are basically more like augmenting the human. And this is what's typically happening since the 1960s with Douglas Engelbart's work, etc. So augmenting the human, of course, also has different levels, right? So, and these different levels this is my argument, they didn't fundamentally change since the 70s or so. If you look at human communication, computer-mediated human communication, the abstractions and the way that we communicate, collaborate, and coordinate work is still extremely primitive. And my take on this is that we can do better than that, in a sense that we can build abstractions, for example, service-oriented abstractions, where we can delegate some piece of work to a group of people, even without knowing who these people are. So I give you an example. You would like to delegate some work to the best team, but you don't necessarily know who the team members are. And that might actually change depending on the particular problem at hand. So you could have an algorithm actually composing the team members based on different criteria, right? Similar to something like what you have with PageRank algorithm, right? So you can have a different set of algorithms to compose the team members. You don't want prima ballerinas as team members. You want to have a kind of diverse set, right? So that's the magic sauce. And you want to compose that kind of automatically. And I think that this is basically the stage that where we need to go to, because the problems that we have to face nowadays, they are so multidisciplinary. We have to bring people together to collaborate much more efficiently and effectively than we did in the past. And my argument then is that in order to be able to do that, we need to scale also. So how is it possible then that we scale actually this compositional aspect of bringing together people into teams? So the scale is one aspect and the automation is another aspect. And we have done research and prototypes in actually doing that, looking into reward systems, incentive systems, and how to bring that together into automating those things. So this is the human side. So we are really just augmenting things. I think, Marco, you had a question or you want to ask a question about the technology side, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because now you presented this as an evolution of our being human in a way, right? I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, my anthropology study and, you know, how we've gone a long way, let's say, from the little tribe, even after the hunting part of it. Right. And then the city. And now we actually want to expand our community, our living together, our society on this augmented reality, almost a cyberspace that we have. So, yeah, the question was, how is technology allowing us to do this?
Yeah, well, I think this is the answer to this question has many dimensions, I suppose. I think one aspect is kind of the transcendence of kind of time and space or vertical technologies that we typically have. So what I mean is that if you look at the way that we have created all the systems that we have, they are pretty much vertically oriented. So what I mean is, so for example, you have systems for enterprise management, you have systems for doing particular things in isolation, right? So for manufacturing, for enterprises, for banks, for healthcare, etc. All of these systems have one thing in common, and that is that they are vertically closed. So in other words, their concern is for one particular domain at the time how the designers saw that domain. And the challenge that we are facing nowadays is that we have to transcend those artificial boundaries. So in a similar way that we are now seeing a reshuffling of concerns where we are merging, let's say, technological things with biology, with medicine, and et cetera. I think that we also, because we are facing new challenges in these days, right, with the COVID pandemic, et cetera. So the question is, how is it also possible to actually transcend these technological boundaries that we have created ourselves, right? So I think that the biggest challenge is actually the mindset, because the technologies that we have created so far, they are built on a divide and conquer mindset. The divide and conquer mindset comes from military strategy. It's basically kind of dividing the troops so that an enemy cannot create a big problem for you. So you divide and conquer it. And that kind of paradigm served us well from in the engineering discipline up to now, up to a certain level of complexity, I would claim. And I think that we have reached a certain threshold of complexity that we can still master with the traditional divide and conquer. The way that we have to structure these different types of systems is becoming so complex that this divide and conquer principle is kind of not very helpful all the time. So we have to look also for other concepts, how we can actually structure systems in a better way. And one of the ingredients I believe that we are researching is the concept of resilience. How can you create a system which is resilient? And for that, we are working on a concept we call elasticity. And this elasticity is actually one of the fundamental building blocks of our approach to address the problems I was mentioning.
Fantastic. And I suspect we'll get into a little more of that here in a second. I wanted to maybe get from you a few scenarios of how this might apply to real life in present times or in the near future. Because what I'm wondering is what's driving this stuff to be built? Because when you were describing how to pick the right team, I know this is completely off whack and I'm not a fantasy football player, but I can see where that's building the best team that you think, right, to play against each other in a fantasy football way. So I'm wondering, is it that type of thing where games are driving these algorithms and these models and these technologies, or is it university research and then it's looking for an application of the technology that's being built, or is it government or military, or where are these some of these things coming from, and what can we see like right there in front of us in terms of some scenarios?
So I think the principle can be applied to a lot of different things. So for example, if you look at the COVID crisis right now, you can clearly see in many places in the world that the reaction to this crisis is basically falling back into the traditional boundaries, of thinking mainly and institutions. So the boundaries, basically we see a rise in national kind of boundaries, right? So closing the borders, etc., trying to fix the problem with that. Apparently it doesn't work. And the other thing is that all the institutions that we have created are actually very similar to what I was describing before regarding the application verticals, right? So what I would like to see is to have instead of basically kind of doing this by hand to assign, let's say, capacity planning for hospitals and coordinating with ambulances and first responders in general, etc. That is probably a good example. So you could kind of automate that in a better way. If you ask new questions, you might also get new results in a sense that, okay, you look into the well-being of a certain cluster of a certain region in your city. And by looking into this, you ask different types of questions which go beyond the traditional boundaries of the systems that you have. And you could actually automatically compose a response to that problem at hand, with the appropriate scale of the problem that you're facing. So for example, sending the right amount of first responders to the right places on time, and then coordinating where they go to the right hospitals over time. This could be automated much better than we are currently doing. Everything is basically, because we have all these boundaries of the systems, it becomes very complicated to actually do things like this. But I think that we actually need this type of going across the boundaries of the system much more than we did in the past. So I'm thinking much bigger than assembling a team for a company or a sports event. Of course, you can also use it there, but I think the claim would be that we can automate things that typically required much more human intervention to software systems, to algorithms, and then freeing ourselves basically to do things that we can do better than just being on the phone and doing stuff like that.
Yeah, well, that goes back to programming the humans, because here's where the first impression and first thing that came in my mind where you're describing the reaction that we had was a very, to the pandemic, was a very human reaction, very instinctive reaction to let's close the border. It's almost like, no, that's exactly, you know, let's become nationalist, let's resolve this problem, because we're thinking with the old paradigm. And we need to accept the new paradigm, which brings the fuel of all this operation to be the data, right? I mean, artificial intelligence lives on data. The more data, the better it is. I'm assuming this entire system you're describing, this global collaboration, it needs the data from everywhere. So here we go a little bit more into the society and the political situation where, again, I'm going to go back to Sean, like, we're going to have to program the humans, because we're okay to give all the privacy to Facebook, but we're not okay to give our data to track the COVID on the app, for example. You know, so it's complicated.
We say, here's the best path, yet we stay stupid. And we don't listen to it anyway. Either we don't trust it or we don't know how to read it or whatever.
Yeah, I think the thing that you are describing, Marco, is essentially an issue of trust or a lack of trust, basically. And I think that this is a fundamental problem of our day and age, that people don't trust or trust less in their governments. And that's probably for good reason, because there have been many indications that there things go wrong, right? But I think exactly as you said, I think a situation with a pandemic is a very good example and lesson, actually, if we learn it. That's the question. It's still, there are basically no signs that we are learning anything from this, or not too much, I think. But I think what it shows is that definitely it requires a global response, right? And a coordinated, orchestrated global response. So, I mean, I'm not an expert in these medical things, but I would basically think that, you know, if the world would have reacted like, okay, we basically make a lockdown for 2 months everywhere globally, that would have been much cheaper than the on and off response that we are currently seeing. So, and I think that this is one of the problems is also that, you know, the systems that are in place today, they are not synchronized well. So we have, again, it comes back to the issue of this divide and conquer mentality, right? So the systems are not connected well, they are not interacting well, and the human part, the human life is also not connected well. So I think that there are several issues from the technology side. There are plenty of issues how to actually integrate those systems much better. That's definitely not an easy thing to do, and it will take us a long time to actually figure this out. But also from the political side, I think there are huge challenges ahead, because the pandemic is showing very nicely, in a sense, that the way that we are treating this problem is not appropriate for the nature of this problem. Basically, any other problem that comes along, which has similar characteristics, we will probably would respond similarly. And that's simply not good enough. I mean, climate change, for example, is one example. I mean, if we respond to climate change the same way, I think this will not go well for us, right? So I think we need a global, coordinated, orchestrated response to this. And I think this is very similar to the nature of the information systems that we are seeing, as I said before.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up climate change, not because it's climate change, but it's one of the things wanted to talk about was, where might this be useful? Clearly, if we have another pandemic and we learn from it, we can have systems in place, maybe we do better in the next pandemic. But what are some other applications for this in the future, for climate change, economy, societal well-being in general?
Yeah, in general, in all of these aspects, right? So healthcare or well-being is one example, another example, right? So if we all know very well which food harms us and which not, right? We basically know that. But the problem is also that you have a lot of corporate interests, big pharma interests, and so which are counter to those things. However, for example, in the COVID times, there was basically no response like, okay, we have to get healthier in general, right? To strengthen the immune system and things like this. So everything was just reactive. That's very peculiar to watch. But there are many different aspects that would benefit actually from this kind of different perspective of mindset. So for example, another one is education. The educational system that we have is still actually from the last couple of centuries, right? So it's pretty dogmatic, and if you like, it's pretty old from the mindset mentality. So it's basically bound to geography, right? So you have a university, it's in a particular place in the world, it has some geographical properties, and it attracts a certain number of people from that region typically. And then the scientists themselves, they typically collaborate all over the world, right? They are global. I mean, science has been global ever since. However, if you observe now again, coming to a little bit to, let's say, the political semantics of different words, if you observe now the what is going on with AI or quantum computing, if you look at it, you observe a couple of interesting words, right? So people are talking about national AI strategies or quantum supremacy. I mean, this clearly shows that the mindset is a part of the problem. There is no such thing as a national AI strategy. There cannot be, because everything by nature in science is, was, and will be global. And the denial of this is not very helpful. You know, it's an illusion. We cannot just, you know, set up things that we build a European Union kind of AI, and then of course we do have different approaches to addressing certain problems. In Europe, we typically think before we implement something and we go through all the possibilities that could go wrong, and then we do something, and this makes us slower. The US and China has a very pragmatic approach to things. First you build it, then you see, right? And I think both are actually good in their own sense, right? But the coordination is I think the thing that is lacking nowadays. So coming back to the ecosystem example I was giving before, if you look at nature, which is in front of our eyes, there is coordination and orchestration constantly going on. And if there is not, there is a big problem and the system will break. And the same will happen to us as societies if we don't coordinate and orchestrate, collaborate and communicate, it will break apart. It is as simple as that. And I think the contribution that, let's say, technologists can give and do is basically to address those challenges from a technological standpoint. I mean, what is different from the past is that the technologies that we are creating now are also shaping the environments of the future. They are not just systems and you play around with them. I think in the last 10 years or so, we have clearly seen that they have a tremendous impact on the psyche of people and, you know, how the way we live and we conduct our affairs. Everything has changed. And I think that so this brings with it a huge responsibility for computer science students and professionals in general.
You know, it is so simple and yet so complicated because, of course, if we look at, as you say, we have natural, the equilibrium of things in our planet. It's so delicate. Everything is feeding what happened in on one side of the world, or what happened in the core of the planet is what affects the atmosphere that we have around. So yeah, it's simple. And yet we're trying to make multiple internets. We're trying to have separate, as you say, artificial intelligence regulation for Europe, and China is going in a direction, and the United States is going in another. And we and make even, things even quite within, complicated.
Was even that within, Sean? I was going to say, even within, there are pulls and pushes. You mentioned big pharma and government having their hand in things, and where does a citizen consumer fit into all that?
But I don't want to have this dystopian vision where Skynet is going to come up. But the question may actually be, as much as the scientific community is collaborating, I mean, I like to think of the International Space Station as the perfect example of that. It's been going on for years, and different part of the world, scientists go there, we're human, and we should all learn from that, but that's a different story.
Right.
But as much as the science can do, if we don't put together a task force that is collaborating amongst different countries, who is going to control this? There is going to be a war or a race to get that supremacy, that quantum supremacy, the artificial intelligence supremacy. So are we looking at dystopia, or are we looking at utopia here?
Well, I think you are absolutely right, in a sense that there is this illusion that any one country can be first. It simply does not make any sense. We are living in a multipolar world. And as I was saying with the ecosystem is a perfect example for that, because it is actually, if you like, the arrows that are connecting all the different players. That is the key thing. It's not just, you know, you cannot say one animal is first and the others come secondary, etc. It simply doesn't make sense. It's not how it's working. And even inside our own body, this is not the case, right? So all of the, if you look at, you know, all the organs and how they are interconnected and with all these thresholds, they are just a fractal image of what is going on in the natural ecosystem. You cannot just say, okay, my kidney is more important than my liver or whatever. I mean, of course you can, you know, there are different aspects and concerns. This is true, but it's an interconnected system, and as such, it has to function. And I think that the state of the world is actually mirroring the state of the systems that we built. I mean, it's of course we are. With our mindsets, we are the builders of the systems, and this is basically giving us a mirror image of who we are. So in other words, also coming back to one of the earlier questions, is basically, yes, we as computer scientists in particular, we are not just observing the reality as it is. No, we are creating the artifacts, and we are creating the reality, our environment. And then this environment is basically acting also as a mirror for us. We are seeing who we think we are. And that image is actually not a very nice image, I think, now. And we can always get out. I mean, it's not something that is, you know, written in stone and needs to be like this forever. We can get out of this by having a different and developing a different mindset and working also on the trust and everything. But the problem is, I think that the problem that the issues are becoming more interconnected. So, and now for a first time really in history, the connectedness of technology and politics is really complex. This was not the case a couple of decades ago. In the past, kind of, let's say the computer guys were the good guys, right?
Right.
But that has clearly changed, I think. And it has changed in the last 10 years, essentially.
Yeah, so Professor, we're coming close to the end of our time here. And I wanted to kind of raise this idea. I want to say technology is with us. We can't fear it. Hopefully we come together as a international group and work together to embrace it and leverage it and make make our lives better from it. What I'm wondering is, because we talk a lot about ecosystems here and nature and I'm picturing the bees,
mm-hmm.
right? And if the bees go, we have a lot of problems.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is there an equivalent of the bees in our physical world in our future digital world that we should really be worried about and looking after?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, actually. I think that the equivalent to the bees would be probably the internet. And the internet is, as you said, also, I think, Marco, you were saying this before, is that we have this fragmentation, this national internets. The fragmentation basically came with the death of network neutrality, right? So the idea of network neutrality is that all data packets are equal, basically, right? However, some people have decided that this is not the case anymore, and they can basically discriminate some data packets positively or negatively and create new bundles of services which are discriminating against other bundles. And ultimately, this is the foundation for national internets, basically, if that word actually exists, I'm not sure, but national networks, right?
Somewhere it does exist.
Yeah, it exists. It exists, actually, right? So, yeah. And this is a problematic development, I believe.
Killer internets, killer bees.
Well, as usual, our podcast create more questions than the answers that it gives. So, I'm very happy about that. I feel like we've done the right thing, and I like to close with this, because if we make people think, we had a good conversation, right?
That's purpose, right? Asking questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we touched on so many different things today, and I think, again, it sparked many ideas for dissect many of these in separate podcasts. So hopefully you'll join us again and we can cover a few other things. But I have to say, I really, really enjoyed this conversation, and it was really an honor to have you on board with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sean. Marco, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and the story made you think, then share ITSP Magazine with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our columns. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.